Item three, review the total portfolio performance. Marty, Tim?
We're delighted to be here, and going to have Marty actually present the report, and I will jump in wherever that seems appropriate.
Thank you. So I'll give a short overview of what happened in the capital markets and the June quarter, and what's happened since then, since the end of the quarter, discuss the watch list, discuss the asset allocation, and then go through the manager performance for different managers. And please ask questions as I go if you have them. So the market overview in the report starts on page one. And in Q2, the Federal Reserve's comments that one day they would stop their massive bond buying program really spooked the market. Interest rates went up, bond prices went down. The Fed that it said they would continue buying bonds at the high rate it's doing, their quantitative easing 3 program until to keep short-term interest rates low until unemployment falls below 6.5%. And currently it's over 7.5%. So that's quite a ways to go. But nevertheless, the market overreacted, and we will see some changes in the value of the assets as we go through the report. Stock market-wise, the U.S. markets were up. International markets were generally down. The unemployment rate did not change in the June quarter. The economy is continuing to improve, but not at a rapid rate. For the U.S. stock market, the S&P 500 is up 2.9% in the June quarter. The Russell 2000, the small stock benchmark, was up 3.1% in the quarter. So small stocks did better than large stocks, which is often the case when the markets are up. In terms of sectors and how they did, the financial sector has the biggest single gain at 7.3%. The banks are getting healthier. The quality of the loans that they hold is getting better as the economy recovers. Consumer discretionary sector was the next strongest sector. It was up 6.8% in the June quarter. So consumers are finally buying big ticket items like cars. REITs fell 4.5% in the June quarter. As interest rates increase, the cost of a mortgage increases, and so the return to a real estate investor goes down, so that hit the REITs. Utilities were down 2.7% because utilities are essentially a perpetual bond. They're a regulated industry, they pay high dividends, they look a lot like a bond, so they're highly correlated to bonds. So when bond prices go down, they go down, and they did. One of the worst sectors was the materials sector for the U.S. market, which fell about 2%. Commodity prices contracted, and that led the sector to go down. As worldwide growth slows down, especially China's growth is slowing down. In the U.S. bond market, the Barclays Ag was down 2.3% in the June quarter, as interest rates went up about 0.5%. Long-term corporate bonds fell 6% because not only did the interest rates go up for treasuries, but also the spread between the risk-free government securities and corporate securities increased as well. So the two combined caused them to fall about 6%. TIPS were down 7% as it looked like things are slowing down, the risk of inflation is lower. But the Fed's ongoing bond purchases will continue to keep interest rates low, even though they're still up from Q2. The international stock market was generally down in Q2. The EAFE index, the Europe, Australia, South Asia index, was down about 1%. Emerging markets were down 8% in the quarter. So an emerging market country is usually one that's transitioning from a dictatorship to a free market economy. So you see a lot of consumer growth, expanding middle class. You know, it's an exciting place for an investor to be, but if you see a contraction, things get hit very hard. So 8% just in a quarter is a good example of that. The international slowdown for commodities has been an issue. China's infrastructure has really propped up commodities, their build out, and that slowed, so that hit commodities.
That's part of what happened to real returns, inflation protected kind of security.
Yeah, we'll find the inflation hedges got hurt in the quarter. Not severely, but definitely they were negative. Because emerging economies are dependent on export of commodities. They don't have very sophisticated business. Auto manufacturing usually isn't something that they're capable of doing, so they're very dependent on commodities. So the worst international market in Q2 was Brazil. That market was down 17%, primarily because of their dependence on commodities.
Could you repeat that? Primarily because?
Their dependence on commodities. They export a lot of commodities. As commodity prices went down, their stocks got hit 17%. And that was just for the quarter. So year-to-date through the end of the June quarter, the S&P 500 is up 13.8%. The bond market, as tracked by the Barclays Aggregate Index, was down 2.4%. July was a strong month for stocks. The S&P 500 is up more than 5%, and since then we're up a little bit. So year-to-date, as of yesterday, the S&P 500 is up more than 19% year-to-date. The Barclays Ag Bond Index is down between 3 and 4% year-to-date. International stocks are up quite a bit year-to-date. Most indexes are up 11 or 12%, except emerging markets, which are down between 5 and 6% year-to-date. So they're coming back, but they're still down year-to-date. On page 11, we have your, at 11 and 12, we have your asset allocation. And your actual allocation, your target allocation are quite close. You're slightly overweight equities, but you're quite close in terms of your asset allocation.
Now, over time, your asset, you've adopted some long-term targets that you're going to move to gradually. And if you look at page 13, that has the current targets and the long-term targets. And you'll notice that you're going to take money out of fixed and global and move it to some to alts and as time goes by, and some to long bonds eventually. We're waiting for interest rates to move up some more before we do that.
Just keep in mind that the rebalancing or semi-annual rebalancing occurred at the end of July. So the targets you see here, we moved back to target as of the end of July.
And you were quite close as of June 30th anyway. So.
Have the domestic markets, do you think, absorbed the upcoming Fed change? Or are we going to see volatility because of who may be selected to be the Fed chairman?
Oh, this is the chairman issue?
Yes.
I would think they'd be pretty consistent with their policies. So there, whenever there's uncertainty, markets hate that, and their prices are depressed by that.
Well, I guess I'm asking is, do any of these numbers reflect an uncertainty? I mean, I know there was a sell-off, I don't know, it seems like it was a couple months ago now, because of the tapering issue and whether that would be continued and so on. And I guess I'm just wondering, is there any upcoming volatility because of the change that's coming?
I wouldn't expect a lot. Whenever markets are surprised, there's some volatility, but I wouldn't expect a lot because of that.
You don't know. If somebody says something stupid, markets are well prepared to bounce in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Even in Q2, this is not news that someday the Federal Reserve Bank would stop their massive bond buying program because it's not sustainable. And that's all they said, and things overreacted. I mean, they're coming back, but there was a surprisingly big reaction.
So it could happen again.
Following up on Scott's question, once that moment comes, now we start, at least we have the potential for a reversal. We've got $3+ trillion of bonds sitting in the Federal Reserve that have been bought with printed money. They start selling those back. Does that have an impact?
I think they're going to sell them back very slowly.
Okay.
And a lot they'll just let expire.
Yeah.
They'll just collect the, because they bought the bond, so they have this right to get the money from the bond. They put out cash, got the bond. The bond entitles them to get income.
And well, in essence, they're selling them back to the government because the government turns around and has to buy them back from the Fed.
Yeah.
So how does it fund that? It turns around and effectively sells more bonds.
Yeah.
So it's just a two-step process. But
yes.
But I think, you know, what we've heard from the marketplace and the prognosticators is attrition is probably going to be the most likely outcome, where they just stop buying, they don't expand the balance sheet, let the bonds run off over 5 years and slowly shrink the balance sheet. Hard pressed to see how they do a large scale sale of the existing portfolio.
Yeah, and if they did that, it would not be a positive for the market.
Yeah. No, it'd scare the market. Everyone would step back.
That was where I was going.
Yeah. So I don't think they'll do that. If there are any other questions, I'll move to page 3, which is the watch list. So Adelante was added to the watch list at the March quarter review because of performance. It turns out, and we'll see the details later, they had a good June quarter. They added 1% of outperformance in the June quarter. or I should say they added 1% of outperformance since the June quarter, but they had a good June quarter in addition. So,
so it really worked, guys.
Yeah.
We should put more people on watch.
So, you know, long-term results still show some weakness, but they've certainly improved in the last couple quarters from where they were before. Intech is on their list because of a personnel change, and there haven't been any other personnel changes at the firm. And the other funds are that are on the watch list are closed-end funds, so you really can't do anything unless it's a very serious problem because you'd have to sell at a large discount. The Invesco funds have done well recently, but over a five-year horizon, their performance is still challenged. Nogales will just remain on the watch list until it's wound down. Long Wharf 3 fund sold a property last month that sold for $20 million more than it was valued at the end of the June quarter. So that property had an internal rate of return of 48%. So we'll see a better September quarter result as a because of that.
And as you know, you've put some more money with both of these entities, both Invesco and Long Wharf.
And on page 14, we have the returns over time by sector and by manager. And that really shows a lot of good news. The total fund was up 0.3% for the June quarter, so better than the flat return of the medium public fund, although slightly below the benchmark portfolio's performance. For the quarter, you were in the 36th percentile, so 64% of the funds in the public defined benefit universe did poor, did worse. Going back 3 or 4 years, you're in the top 6% of your peer group. Past 10 years, top 4%. And for every period more than a year, you're in the you're in the top quartile. So these are great results, and we have every intention of keeping you there.
As best we can.
Yeah, we're working on it. looking at domestic equities, the domestic equities portfolio was up 2.7% in the June quarter, the same as the Russell 3000. So the equity managers ranked as a whole in the middle of peer pack of the peer group. Ceradex had a difficult quarter. It was up 0.3% compared to its benchmark, which is up 2.5%. However, since inception a year ago, its performance is still in line with the benchmark. Delaware underperformed as well for the quarter, but it's been in the portfolio for a long time, and it's added value over the longer period. For the past year, Delaware's performance is still in line with its benchmark. Emerald outperformed in the quarter, in the June quarter, and it's been a very consistent outperformer over time. Intech underperformed slightly in the quarter, but it's done all right over time. It's very close to its benchmark for many of the trailing periods. PIMCO Stock Plus underperformed in the quarter with a return of 2% versus 2.9% for the benchmark, but it's above the benchmark for all the trailing periods that are more than a year. It underperformed for the quarter mostly because it was a terrible quarter for fixed income investments. And Stocks Plus is an interesting structure. Essentially, if you give them $1 million, they'll get $1 million of exposure in the S&P 500 through futures and use money then set aside separately, since futures don't require all the capital, to make bets in the bond market. So it's essentially a hedge fund-like strategy that's where they make the bets are pretty independent of the stock market itself, and they add that to the stock market returns. But they've done a great job of implementing that strategy. Rubico Boston Partners outperformed substantially in the quarter. They had a 5.9% return compared to their benchmark return of 3.2. They've been very successful manager, very consistent, and they're in the top quartile for every trailing period. They were bought by a firm named Oryx. I just learned yesterday, so the name may change in the next report. And then finally, WHV was terminated during the second quarter. The assets were redistributed to PIMCO Stocks Plus and the Intech large cap core portfolio. And any questions on?
Ceradex, why have they not done well the last quarter and their year to date they're down too? I mean, to be 90th in the that's to
me
pretty low.
They had some stock specific bets that didn't work out. So
it was stock choices?
Stock choices, yeah. Yeah, it was just stock specific.
And it's still pretty early, and over the 1 year there, which is the longest period that we show here, they they have matched their index, so it's too soon to, we think, to.
Yeah, I see it the 1 year they did, but okay.
Yeah. So there's some normal volatility in the quarter to quarter is reasonable to expect. When it goes on for a while, or they've sold the position and taken new ones, then that's kind of scary. They just can't bounce back. It's like the bet is still on, and still the investment thesis is the same.
Thank you.
In international equity, William Blair is doing really well. It was down 1.6% compared to its benchmark, which lost 3%, and it's been consistently beaten its benchmark. GMO was removed in the March quarter, and candidates for replacement we'll discuss right after this performance review. State Street is holding the money from GMO in an index until a replacement is chosen. The global equity managers are on the next page. Global equities were up 0.5% for the quarter. They're on page 15, sorry, which is above the MSCI equity return, which was down 0.4% for the quarter. Artisan had a very good quarter. They're up 1% where the benchmark was actually down 0.4%. First Eagle was down 0.5%, slightly more than a benchmark, but they've done well over time. And Intech underperformed by a very small amount in the quarter.
You would expect First Eagle to underperform in a strong up market like the last year, because they're a low beta manager. They own cash, they own gold. You expect them to protect you when the markets are lousy and not quite keep up when the markets are good.
They look very different from the index itself. Mm-hmm. So they will behave, they'll march to their own drummer to some extent. JP Morgan had a gain of 1% versus a loss of 0.4% in the benchmark, and they're ahead of their benchmark for all of the trailing periods. Domestic investment grade fixed income on the top of page 16 has done very, very well. The domestic fixed income investment grade group was down 1.6% for the quarter, and that's better than the Barclays benchmark of minus 2.4%. And overall, ranked the Contra Costa fixed income portfolio ranked in the 7th percentile. AFL-CIO is basically in line with its benchmark. Goldman Sachs Core Plus slightly outperformed in the quarter, but they've done very well over time. The Goldman Sachs workout portfolio, which is not quite small in terms of dollars, but it had substantial outperformance in the quarter. Lord Abbott.
You may recall that was a portfolio they took over from Western Asset Management a few years back, and it was a portfolio of a lot of mortgage backs and other things that had really been blasted in the 2008-2009 period, and have come back very strongly. So it really paid off to find a caretaker for the portfolio rather than to liquidate it at the bottom. It's really worked out well.
And I know there's a persistent question about when that's going to go away. The short answer is I can't give you an exact date, probably by year end. And it's not going to be sold off. Quite frankly, they've recovered to the point where Goldman Sachs is now interested in these types of securities, and they'll probably be bringing it into the main portfolio. So we'll probably see that go away by year end.
This was one of the ones that caught my attention going through this. Is part of this because the prices dropped so low?
Yeah.
There wasn't a natural buyer on the other side, so the prices were artificially low when we did the transition.
So the gains clearly are unusually attractive.
Yeah, these were things that really got beaten up. They're lower quality mortgages.
Okay.
That in 2008 were at giveaway prices.
As in 10, 20 cents on the dollar.
Right.
Simply because there wasn't a natural buyer on the other side. So it was a technical dislocation. The
hedge funds were unloading them as they were looking for liquidity, and it worked out to hold on. So.
Yeah, it's something you don't want to sell when the market doesn't want to buy it. It'll be very nasty. Lord Abbott slightly underperformed in the quarter. It's done very well over time. PIMCO Total Return had a very difficult quarter. Again, the PIMCO makes a lot of similar bets across portfolios. They lost 3.2% compared to a benchmark loss of 2.3%. However,
similar to who?
The Stocks Plus. they essentially make this, you know, same sort of bets.
The stocks plus is a lot shorter in duration, but similar kind of philosophy.
Okay.
But they bound the roughly 1% that they underperformed in June quarter, they outperformed in July. So they've made that up just in the July period.
Keep in mind, about every 3 years, PIMCO makes a bet that goes very wrong over a short period of time, and they have got a spectacular track record of recovering from those short-term mistakes.
Okay.
So the right window to look at a PIMCO is not a very short-term period or a snapshot.
No, it's a medium-term period for them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Their bets will bounce around.
Yeah.
But they've been very good at making them.
Wish mine would bounce around like that.
The Torchlight
makes you nervous.
Torchlight 2, 3, and 4 funds are closed-end funds, so you really have to wait until the fund's liquidated to know exactly what your results are. And the best way to evaluate them is to look on page 20, which shows internal rate of return calculations. So that for the closed-end funds, for private equity, for real estate, the IRR on page 20 is really the way to evaluate it. The Torchlight Fund 2 started in 2006, so you can imagine just starting to invest right before the financial crisis when the market was at peak. That's a very tough time, so that's why that has a negative return. The next asset class is high yield. The Allianz high yield manager, it's the bottom of page 16.
That, as you might, those of you who've been around for a while know that, might know this as Nicholas Applegate, they changed the name.
They did well in the quarter. They lost 0.7% compared to its benchmark, which lost twice as much. And they've done very well over time. In global fixed income, go ahead.
Where's their home? Is that San Diego?
Yeah.
The state, okay. Okay.
Global fixed income at the top of page 17 is just Lazard. They lost 3.5% in the quarter, so more than the benchmark loss of 2.8%. But over any time period that's more than a year, they've added value. So most recently, they've had a difficult period.
Marty, Lazard. I've always been in favor of Lazard. But I'm starting to wonder a little bit. Should I worry at all? Or what's your evaluation of Lazard, especially over the last year?
Well, the last year has been difficult, but they've been a pretty consistent contributor, positive contributor before that. Pull it up here.
If you look at the top of page 17, you can see that over 2, 3, 4, 5 years they've added value compared to their index. And over the last year, they were 20 basis points behind. So it's
only like the last year, though.
Yeah.
Do you think is there something going on?
No, we're not aware of any changes, and the same ladies running the show.
Okay.
And keep in mind, they do have a fairly significant emerging markets bet, and as Marty pointed out, the emerging markets took a pretty big hit in the second quarter, so that's going to contribute to that short-term volatility. Since inception, they're still adding value net of fees.
All right.
Yeah, I didn't check on the performance to date in this quarter, but I suspect a lot has come back. Inflation hedges is the next category, and this was a really tough quarter for inflation hedges. Inflation hedge portfolios tend to hold things like TIPS, which are down a lot, the inflation-protected securities. PIMCO is down 4%. Wellington is down 3.4%. I looked at the bets the PIMCO All Asset Fund made. Almost everyone lost money. So for them to collectively lose money, only 4% is actually pretty good. But the Fed announcement and the reaction to it was pretty unexpected. And they've bounced back a good deal since that point. These, just to remind you, these will be a source of capital for capital calls for the Aether and Common Fund, private equity funds, that were selected a couple meetings ago. So these particular allocations will shrink and the private equity ones will grow. Okay. Turning to real estate returned 1.6% in the quarter. Private real estate was up in the quarter and REITs were mostly down in the quarter. And other than in Atlante and Invesco, your real estate investments are in long-term closed-end funds, so they're not liquid investments. You can't just sell them if you change your mind.
So again, the IRRs are really the more relevant numbers.
Yeah.
The internal rates of return.
Adelante was put on the watch list at the last quarterly performance review. However, their performance in this quarter was strong. They were up 0.2%, while their benchmark was down 1.4%. So that brings their performance at the end of June to in line with the benchmark for the last 2 and 10 year periods. Since the end of June, Adelante is down 2.7%. Their benchmark is down 3.7%. So they've added a percent in relative performance just since the end of June.
So these rankings, which don't look very good, are going to look better at the end of the next quarter. So in terms of what do you do about the watch list, Adelante, which is the one thing that you can do something about, we think things have only gotten better.
So. You don't want to wait another quarter? You think maybe it's okay to do it now?
You know Jung's here, don't you?
That's why you said that.
Okay.
You're having too much fun, Jerry.
All right.
I mean, they have a very commonsensical approach to what they do. They take the REIT portfolios and look at actual private market transactions to value them. And that makes very good sense. So to the extent that the market doesn't pay attention to the right factors, like there are times where it will drive up the prices of REITs that have higher payouts of cash and make them overvalued. You compare them to the private market values and say, well, that doesn't quite match. So I think they've got a very correct approach of doing what they do. So I wouldn't evict them immediately. Turning to the illiquid real estate managers, and there you really need to look at page 20 to look at the internal rate of returns to get the real sort of perspective on that. Any of the real estate funds are invested in the 2005 to 2007 period have really not done well. They're buying things right at the market peak, 2006, 2007, and then they hit the terrible market in 2008. So that's what really explains the two negative real estate performance that you'll see on page 20. Since the end of June, Long Wharf sold a property, $20 million premium, so its results will look better for the September quarter. In alternatives, the return was 3.8% for the quarter, and Adams Street and Pathway have done very, very well for you. You do have, on page 20, you'll see the EIF Power Fund 4, where gross of fees has got a positive return, net of fees has got a negative return, and that's because it's just ramping up with a 2011 investment, and it's just not far enough into the process so that the returns are overcoming the fees, and this is normal. This will improve over time, but it looks unusual when you look at the chart. And Oak Tree returned 5.9% in the quarter, and I'll take any questions that you might have.
So all in all, a pretty good quarter.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next thing on the agenda is the International Value Manager Search. Sorry.
Is there a motion to accept the current or the quarterly report?
So moved.
So moved. Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So the recommendation is no changes to the